meeting, and the first thing is I want to remind people about our teleconference participation process. Primary component being, please do not put your phone on hold because it'll play background music and we'll have to mute you. Please be aware of everything that you do will be amplified through speakerphones into the conference, creating discord, and we'll have to mute you. So, you know, don't take side conversations, and be aware of everything you're doing, including work on your computer, can be amplified and projected. When you speak, please say your name. When you make motions and seconds, please say your name so we can capture that. And again, wait till you're called upon, and everybody who wishes to speak will have the opportunity. All right, so Diana, there's still some issues with your phone, so I'm sure. What I'd like to do first is then go ahead and have those here in Tallahassee introduce themselves.
Chris Howell.
Tom Campbell.
Jim Hammers.
Chip Sellers.
Justin Bogle.
Mama Donnie.
And I'm Jeff Blair. So what I'm going to do is open each TAC, accessibility, and then code administration, get them to approve the agenda, determine there's a quorum, approve the agenda in the minutes, then go to the code administration, approve the agenda in the minutes, and then we'll ask the code administration whether they have any particular research projects for consideration, and if they do, we'll discuss those, and if not, they can adjourn the meeting, and then we'll go back to the accessibility TAC and take up their research projects, et cetera, and I'll go through that in a second, but that's the overall plan so that folks understand. All right, I'm going to start with the accessibility TAC, and first is Commissioner Gross. Jeff, are you on?
I'm on. I'm here, Jeff.
Great. And Beamy Eustis?
Pardon?
Jack Humberg? Sharon McNarty? Barbara Page?
I'm here.
Very good. Linda Parnell? All right. Commissioner Schiffer?
I'm on.
Commissioner Schilling?
Yes, I'm here.
Larry Schneider?
Here.
Commissioner Worrell? We know she's on. Is she still muted?
Looks like she went off.
All right. And Jim Woollyhand? All right, well, we have seven present. That's with the assumption of Commissioner Worrell, but even so, we still have a quorum, even if there's only six counted, but we have seven. So we do have a quorum. So the first piece of business is today's...
Can you hear?
Yeah. So I'm counting you as present.
Thank you.
Very good.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Today's agenda is to approve the agenda, the minutes from the June 20th meeting, and to discuss and prioritize research projects that have been submitted relevant to the accessibility code, and then to consider the ADEC statement DS 28051 by Clark M. Stranahan, and then to discuss changes to the accessibility waiver application, and then to take any general comments. Unless there's any questions or regarding the agenda, is there a motion to approve the agenda as it was posted?
Schilling, so moved.
Motion to approve.
All right, a motion.
Second, Worrell.
Very good. A motion and second from Schilling and Worrell. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Aye. It's unanimous. Any revisions and or additions to the June 20th, 2017 meeting minutes? If not, is there a motion to accept the report as posted?
Well, I have a change, I think. On the minutes, I noticed that there's a reference there to adding something about a lift to the bed height project, and there's not a reference within the minutes saying what that lift referred to or who whose project that would be.
Jim.
So perhaps that could be added in there, because I have no recollection.
Okay, so if I understood you, you'd like to see some explanation of what the discussion was regarding adding the lift to the bed height. Is that correct?
That's it. I don't know what the what's referring to exactly.
Okay, so some clarification.
Not clear in the minute.
All right, so lift and bed height.
Okay, is she talking? Scroll down.
Is it item one?
I'm sorry?
Are you able to see on your computer what's on the screen? It says the TAC recommended the following projects. One is bed height slash lift. Is that what you're referring to in the minutes?
No, he said that the bed height and the lift could be combined, but there's nothing referencing what the lift is all about. I assume it's not a lift into bed.
That's a lot. How old is this?
It's here. It's been from that collection. Yes. We'll take a look. And I just wanted to make sure that I was in the right spot. So, okay. We'll look at it.
All right. So then, is there a motion to approve the minutes as amended to include clarification regarding the lift and bed height issue?
Motion to approve. Yeah. That's
all right, we have a motion and a second from Demi.
That's it, Demi.
Very good, we have you. Thank you. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
That's Demi?
Yes.
Am I muted?
No.
No, we can hear you.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I think that just an FYI, I think that was tied to my recommendation about separating the Flora-specific rooms and having the bed height and the lift tied to the mobility rooms as opposed to the bathroom requirements tied to an ambulatory room. Maybe that was it, just to refresh your memory since it's been a year.
Yeah, I recall that.
Who else is speaking now?
This is Laurel.
Go ahead, Diana.
I couldn't hear that very well. But the reason for the lift being in the proposal was to do what?
Bemmy?
I believe we were tying those two together, Diana. We had had some discussion about, you had discussion about the bed lift, the bed height, and I had some discussion about separating the floor requirement of lifts for mobility rooms. So those two would be tied to mobility rooms. And then the bathroom requirement for the raised water closet and grab bars would be tied to the Florida specific for an ambulatory. I think that's what it was.
This is mobility
room. We had talked about combining those into one proposal and then
separating what you're...
Yes,
I'm sorry, I don't understand what you're referring to, a lift for a mobility room.
I'll tell you what, we're going to clarify the minutes and then we can take a look at it for the next meeting and make sure that it that accurately reflects your recollection, if that's okay. Okay, so we've approved the minutes and the agenda for and opened the accessibility TAC, and now we're going to do the same for the code admin TAC. Commissioner Gerwig?
I'm here.
Commissioner Bahadori? Commissioner Boyer?
Here.
Commissioner Brown? Commissioner Gilson?
Here.
Commissioner Goff?
Good morning.
Morning. Michael Guaracio? John O'Connor?
Here.
And Diana Worrell? All right, so we have six members. That constitutes a quorum. The agenda is to approve the minutes and to determine whether there's any research projects that this group would like to, the code admin TAC would like to forward to the commission, take any general comments, and then to adjourn, unless there's any questions or comments. Is there a motion to approve the agenda as it was posted?
So moved. For it.
All right. Boyer and O'Connor, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It's unanimous. Are there any revisions and or corrections to the June 12, 2018 meeting minutes? Is there a motion to accept the report?
Accept, Boyer.
Boyer and O'Connor.
Motion in a second by Boyer and O'Connor. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It's unanimous. Okay, so Mo's going to describe the research plan, which will stand for bulk tax. We won't have to do it again for the accessibility, so if everybody just listen to the plan, and then I'll ask if there's any research projects from the code admin tag, and if there is, we'll discuss them. If not, we'll ask you to adjourn the meeting. Go ahead, Mo.
Yeah, this is Mo Madani. Good morning. As you recall, every fiscal year, we convene the tax to mainly solicit proposed research projects for consideration under the Commission's research program. We do receive certain funds to mainly finance a certain project that's needed. And with regard to the research as defined in the in the work plan as posted on the agenda, a proposal for research a project, it should be specific to studying a specific code related issue topics for the purpose of providing solutions to a specific problem or future code changes directed at improving the implementation and enforcement of the Florida Building Code. The issue to be researched or the proposal must be fully understood, meaning that whoever submitting the proposal need to provide a clear research objective and goals, a clear defined scope of work, approach, and a budget or estimated budget. The research work plan or the schedule for implementation, as you see, starting July, we convene all the TACs and solicit research topics between July and August 2018. Staff will compile the outcomes of the TAC meetings for all the research topics that is proposed by the TAC and make available list of research topics for review at the chair TAC meetings, which will take place August 14, 2018, in conjunction with the upcoming commission meeting. The TAC chair's meeting would consider all the recommended listed research projects for consideration by the commission and recommend certain ones for consideration by the commission. August and September 2018, staff will find a qualified entity to do the research. And October 2018, staff would draft a purchasing order or a contract for a specific research project that was approved by the commission, and so that can be implemented. In November 2018, staff would mainly make sure that the contract is executed, but by June 15 is to complete the research or partial research if there's a problem with completing the research. Any question about the plan?
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mo. So does the code administration TAC have any projects for research that meets those requirements that they would like to put forward at this time? Okay. Is there any general public comment or comment on the same? All right. Well, let me do a concluding roll call, and then Commissioner Gerwig can adjourn us. Commissioner Gerwig.
Here.
Commissioner Baladori, Commissioner Boyer,
here.
Commissioner Brown, Commissioner Gilson,
still here.
Commissioner Goff,
here.
Michael Duracio, John O'Connor,
here.
Oh, okay.
Here.
And John O'Connor's here, and Commissioner Worrell.
Here.
All right, we have seven members, one more than opening roll call. Thank you. Okay, Commissioner Gerwig, if you would go ahead and adjourn, sir.
All right, Jeff, staff, and other staff, and everything, I really appreciate y'all's work on this. Fellow members of the group, I appreciate everybody joining the call this morning. So at this time, we'll stand adjourned.
Thank you. And
Thank you.
Please stay on the line. Okay, well, we're now at Accessibility Tech, and Mo has already described the research plan, and there's two proposals on the table, and we'll determine whether there's any others, and then we'll rank the two for relative priority. So the first one is submitted by Sabrina Kimball, and it's regarding the need for adult changing table study. Is Sabrina or a representative for that proposal on the line?
Sabrina Kimball.
This is Brad Schiffer. I've been working with Sabrina on this.
Okay, very good.
Either one of us could do it.
All right, well, I'll let you all decide that. If you'd just like to give an overview of the proposal that we do have in writing, any additional information you want, we'll take questions and comments. They'll do the same for Diana's proposal, and then we'll come back and conduct a ranking exercise, assuming there aren't any additional proposals to be added to the list.
I'll introduce this. This is a proposal we put in last year, and what it is there's a need in the accessibility community for a changing table that would treat an adult. The ideal one is a motorized table. So what this proposal is doing, which is a little different than last year because it put too much money on it last year, is to have a survey done so if we can determine what kind of needs there are in Florida for these type of proposals to assist in people's ability to go outside, to go to events, to leave their home and not put themselves in the position where they have to leave quickly to change. So, Sabrina, if you can do a better job of cleaning that up. Sabrina is kind of the, the champion of this cause in Florida. You're going to find these being put in, the turnpike restroom stations and stuff like that. So she's doing a good job, and I guess even around the country. So, Sabrina, you want to add to that?
Thank you, Brad. Brad and I have been working on this project trying to make people aware of this need. I have a son who is in a wheelchair, and this has become a big issue for us as he's gotten older, because he outgrew the baby changing tables a long time ago. And as he gets older and heavier and longer, there is no safe, clean place to change him. Your alternative is to lay him on a public restroom floor. And I don't know about you, but not many of us even like walking on public restroom floors, let alone having to lay a loved one on that. Plus, there's the issue of not just people with wheelchair users, but we have people that have incontinence issues, they have colostomies or catheters. They need a safe, clean place. And what I found through my research was there is a movement called Changing Places that started in Britain, and they do these amazing rooms for people with disability issues that include these powered tables. And the power adjustable table is the one that we highly recommend because it allows for safer transfers. You can lower it down to a height that's easy to transfer somebody straight over from a wheelchair to the table. Then it can raise back up so that the care provider is not having to get in a strange position to try to change them or take care of them. So it is a safety precaution as well. They have side rails so you do not have to worry about somebody falling. And it gives a safe, clean place to have someone be taken care of. What we have done so far is that one of my first big contracts was with the Department of Transportation. And the Department of Transportation has made it part of their building program, and so all of our new rest areas or remodeled rest areas will have these in their family restrooms.
Okay, very, very good. Thank you. Does any TAC member have any questions they'd like to ask Brad and or Sabrina regarding the proposal?
Yes, this is Larry Schneider. Are you just looking for the intent to put this in the Florida Accessibility Code, that this would be a requirement?
Larry, this is Brad.
The intent of this proposal is just to do the research to see what kind of needs or demands the accessibility community would have for this type of thing. Where that data goes could be that, could be nothing other than advisory for people building buildings. But this thing is solely just a study for demand.
Okay, so it's just really to look at for the need and clarifying that for potentially the number of persons that this could be beneficial to, something like that.
Correct.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions or comments from TAC members? All right. Is there any public comment regarding this proposal? All right. Well, let's go to the next proposal, which is Commissioner Diana Worrell's proposal regarding bed height, bed frame, and scoping recommendations for the Board Accessibility Code for Building Construction. Diana, would you like to elaborate on your proposal or give us a summary of it?
Can you hear me okay? This long?
We can hear you. It's a little.
Can you hear me okay?
That's better. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So the purpose of the project is to make a recommendation on a Florida-specific code standard that would apply to bed frame, bed height, and make a recommendation for the scoping requirements. The gist of the problem is that the mattresses on the hip and the hip capacity have been getting higher and higher, and they typically range between 25 and 30 inches high, which poses a huge obstacle for anyone with a mobility disability, including people who have paralysis, or they just have low extremity weakness, they have terrible palsies, short stature, older people with disabilities, and so on. So as the beds get higher, the rooms that were once considered accessible have become inaccessible. This was an example. The last meeting was before the Building Commission. I was totally unable to even stay at the same hotel as all the other commissioners because the beds were on platforms and were totally inadjustable at all and could not even be dropped down on the floor. So I had to find another hotel about 10 miles away and do that. And this successful hotel goes on in the disability community just endlessly. So it's really a large problem for that, and coming up with a foot height or a way to reach a foot height
for an individual is really the gist of the problem. It may end up being that there's a recommendation for an adjustable bed frame, but we'll have to see what the results of the project would be. But that's the problem and what I'd be going for. Any questions?
All right, thanks, Diana. Does any TAC member have any questions I'd like to ask Diana regarding her proposal or comments?
Hey, this is Brad. Diana, real quick, is there a code required compliant height?
There is no code requirement at the moment, either in the ADA or Florida-specific. And so this would be for a Florida-specific requirement only, of course.
Okay.
This is Larry Schneider. Brad, actually there is a requirement now. In the ANCA 117.1 2017 edition, as a member of that committee, this was a meeting to discuss. And under section 1102.15.3, the discussion rose around the bed height, and it is in the 2017 ANCA 117.1, and it basically is a bed height from 17 to 23 inches. So item has been discussed on a national level. It is in the new ANSI standard, and that information is available.
So this is Shipper again.
Can I respond to that?
Go ahead, Diana.
Part of the problem with that is that these standards can be set, you know, by the particular hotel. So let's say they set it at 23. That's totally impossible for some people. 17 is impossible for another set of people. So
setting a range like that, that's quite a large range, really complicates the whole problem, because it's really the same thing as what we have right now. Bed heights come in different degrees, and you never know till you get to the room how high it's going to be. So, for example, I would be able to get into a bed that's 20 inches, but not into a bed that's 23. So I would end up with the same exact problem, having to call the hotel, getting them to mass the floor and build it up to a height that I could use, which many hotels are not willing to do. Anyway, I think that it still needs to be looked at for Florida specific, and to see if there's some recommendations we can make for Florida.
Okay. Other questions or comments?
Yeah, this is Larry Schneider. All I was doing was reporting what was done on a national level under the ANSI committee.
Very good.
Appreciate that, Larry. Thank you.
And that's helpful for, you know, looking at those things when the project is going forward. Other questions or comments regarding Commissioner Worrell's proposal? All right. Any public comment? All right. So we have two proposals. Are there any other accessibility code-related proposals that need to be discussed before we rank these two for relative priority? Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask each TAC member in turn which their number one priority is between the adult changing table proposal and then the bed height proposal, and then whichever one is one that the second one will by default be the number two. Commissioner Gross, which is your number one choice, the changing table or bed height frame?
The bed height, but as far as I remember, we did a white paper on this a couple of years ago. I think our staff member prepared it with the DREP, the DREERS standards. So we need to look back and see what we've done before.
Okay, good. Thank you. Demi Eastis, which is your number one choice?
Changing tables, please.
Okay.
Changing table?
Yes, ma'am. Got it. I'm assuming Jack and Sharon are not on the call. Barbara Page, what would be your number one choice?
I would go with the bed frame.
Okay. I'm assuming Linda's not on the call. Commissioner Schiffer, which is your choice?
Changing table.
All right. Commissioner Schilling?
Changing table.
Okay. Larry Schneider?
Bed height.
All right. Well, here we are at the tiebreaker. Commissioner Worrell.
Bed height.
All right. And I'm assuming Jim Woolihan's not on the call. All right. So the number one.
Yes.
Oh, you are on the call?
Yes. I'm sorry. This is Jim. I joined a little late.
All right, Jim. Which one would you give?
Changing table.
All right. Well, we have a perfect tie, 4-4. That's no problem. We'll just say that they're both number one priorities. Okay, good. So we have two proposals that are ranked. Somebody that are ranked equally. All right. Well, that concludes the research piece. Appreciate that feedback to the technical advisory committee chairs meeting on the 14th. Now we're going to go to our next piece, which is a declaratory statement, DS 2018-051, by Clark M. Stranahan of C4 Architecture. Is there anybody representing, or is Clark Stranahan on the call?
Clark Stranahan is on the call. Thank you.
All right. So we have your deck statement, and you have staff's analysis, which we'll go over. Do you have anything else you'd like to add at this stage initially? You're certainly going to be allowed to speak once staff analysis is done and during the TAC discussion, but would you like to provide any additional information or an overview at this time?
Not at this time.
Okay, good. So we'll go ahead and take staff's analysis. Mo?
Good morning, Mo Medani. The issue is DS 2018-051. The petitioner seeks mainly a clarification or an interpretation of Chapter 2 scoping requirements, Section 201.1 scope, Section 201.1.1 vertical accessibility, Section 206.2.3 multi-story building and facility, of the Florida Building Code 6th edition 2017 accessibility. The specific question that being asked is, does the Florida Accessibility Code Section 201.1.1 and 206.2.3 allow limited use, limited application elevators or platform lift installed where the Florida Accessibility Code Section 408 or 410 to meet the requirement for vertical accessibility in building where the ADA does not require vertical accessibility. In the background, mainly we are dealing with a new construction, a future project, two-story office building in Seminole County, Florida. In the analysis, I've given you the code sections that reference in the request and additional sections. Just in the page two, I put a note under section 206.2.3, multi-story building and facility. Mainly, it's our understanding that conveying systems such as a platform lift, stairway chair lift, limited use, limited application elevator may be used to provide vertical accessibility where the building is exempt from the ADA requirement for an elevator. Taking that, and also in 2000, in beige, in beige, I believe the fourth page, I have added a reference to DS-2016-098. This declaratory statement was issued to a subject similar to what we are addressing here. Mainly the question at that time was, as opposed to seeking waiver to install a platform lift in this situation, is the use of a platform lift acceptable in accordance with the FBC 2014 accessibility section 410 and 206.7? Should a waiver be required for a design that apparently meet code requirement? The answer to the question is the use of a platform lift acceptable in accordance with the FBC 2014 accessibility section 410 and 206.7? The answer is yes. A platform lift that is in compliance with section 410 and 206.7 and listed certified for the intended use is acceptable for the project in question. To the question, should a waiver be required for a design that apparently meet the code requirement, the answer is no. A waiver application is not necessary for the project in question. Based on what I have just stated, and also based on our understanding, staff analysis, the question as stated, does the Florida Accessibility Code Section 201.1.1 and 206.2.3 allow limited use, limited application elevators for platform lift installed by FBC 408 or 410 to meet the requirement for vertical accessibility in building where the ADA does not require vertical accessibility? The answer, the petitioner's answer, option one, petitioner respectfully believe that the answer to the question outlined above is yes. Staff in agreement with the petitioner, however, add further clarification. So option two with the staff, the answer to the question is yes. Limited use, limited application, elevator or platform lift installed as per section 408 or 410 of the 6th edition 2017 Florida Building Code accessibility and listed certified for the intended use are acceptable for the project in question. Thank you.
Thank you, Mo. Does any TAC member have any questions or comments regarding the staff analysis and the petition?
Yes, this is Larry Schneider. I just sent out this morning a copy of a legal opinion from October 26, 1999. This is when it was the Florida Board of Building Codes and Standards from the staff attorney, Susan Schmidt, when that question was asked and answered, that the answer is yes to the question, and that has been the premise that we all have been operating on since that date. Actually, before that date, but Susan clarified it, and that is what everybody has been using since that date. So I'm kind of interested to find out from the other side of, I guess we have a local billing department that's not accepting it, but that has been the way we have been operating since that date.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Does the petitioner wish to add any additional information, or, you know, are you satisfied with staff's answer or in agreement with it?
I greatly appreciate everyone's time, effort into looking into this. We do have a building official who disagreed with our proposal from the beginning. It is difficult with the Florida amendments in this section where the exemptions were removed. It isn't 100% clear that it's allowed. I kind of see this Seminole County building officials side of things. It's not as explicit in the Florida version of the code as it is in the base building code. But I greatly appreciate the interpretation, and I'm happy to hear it.
Very good. Is there any public comment on the petition? All right, going back to the TAC, is there any further discussion and or a motion?
Yes,
this is Jimmy. Go ahead, Larry.
I make a motion to recommend accepting option two, staff's recommendation.
Second.
All right.
Jimmy.
Very good. We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion on the motion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? It's unanimous. Very good. Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Stanahan. All right. The next issue is discussion of changes to accessibility waiver application. We'll be handling that.
I can't speak on this time.
Yeah, you can speak. Yeah. I mean, if you need me to.
Yeah.
It's pretty simple.
Yeah, we're...
Okay.
I think really the issue here is that... as you see, we uploaded into the agenda the waiver application or the cover page of the waiver applications. I can see a number item two there under the list of required information. When a substantial financial cost of compliance is alleged, supporting cost estimate would quote from at least two vendors or contractors and catalog information. So what we really were asked, and actually went through the commission and all that, is we're proposing to add a clarification into that part of the informational or the required information, which says all supporting cost estimate and quotes must contain an itemized breakdown of the cost to bring the project into compliance, which is mainly, you know, to require an itemized list of cost and not really a lump sum cost for the compliance with the accessibility, especially vertical accessibility in this case. We are really looking for comments, if any concern or comments from the group at this point.
All right. TAC members, any comments regarding the proposed addition to the language?
Yes, this is Larry Schneider. I guess I'm not going to support the idea that you need two cost breakouts. I think I understand the concern is the cost of an elevator. And when you look at the price of the elevator for the number of applicants that we have seen in the past, you do see a variance of numbers. Some people are just putting in the cost of the elevator, and then other ones are including cost of structure modifications. So the applicants, I believe, are not consistent in their information that they provide to you, but that paragraph that you just showed on the page If you could put that back up again, I would appreciate that for everyone's view. An itemized breakout. If you do the breakout cost, it's going to be it, and the applicant submits what they submit, and that's what they believe the numbers are. To get two costs from two elevator suppliers, I mean, sometimes some people do it, but the elevator guys all know in the industry that, look, this is just, they're never going to get it because 90% of the time the waiver happens. So I feel comfortable that what the commission has been doing in the past with the gathering of the data has been sufficient for the appropriate evaluation of a waiver application. Thank you.
Okay. Other comments?
This is Fred Schilling, and I don't think that that's exactly what we're looking for. I think what we're looking for is that we're trying to get a detailed breakdown of the cost of the renovation of the facility or the structure in general, so that we have a better gauge in which to determine, you know, actual disproportionate costs. I think we're clear on the fact that Larry mentioned, you know, about the cost from elevator contractors and the cost for elevators, which whether it includes the structural modifications that may be necessary for that. But I think we're the objective here, what we're trying to understand, and what we've had issues in the past with is just what I stated, is that we'd like to see a more detailed breakdown of the various costs associated with the building of the building, so that we could better determine whether or not we have actual realistic numbers to help determine that disproportionate cost. Thank you.
This is Diana Worrell. I would agree with Fred Schilling's assessment, and thank you.
This is Mo Madani. I think we already receiving a detailed itemized cost for the construction project. I thought the issue here, as we look at what's in number two, is really we're talking about the quotes from at least two vendors. It has to do with the compliance. We do already receive an itemized cost for the project itself, a construction cost, so I'm not sure what the issue there.
Worried about the detailed cost. I think in that sentence you again showed earlier on the slide, on the computer, you've got that, and staff can look at that when that comes in and says, guys, you just can't give us a cost because it costs $300,000. We need the breakout, and here's the sentence that says it's required. And you just need to enforce what you've already got in written language. But I don't think you need two cost estimates.
The two cost estimate for the compliance is already in the informational piece. It says that quotes from at least two vendors. So we do already require the two costs from the two vendors.
So then, and then what's the highlight?
The highlights is the what exists, the language that already exists. That's not the new language.
The proposal is to add the additional sentence, all supporting cost estimates and quotes must contain an itemized breakdown of the cost to bring the project into compliance. The piece that Mo just described, number two, is already in the waiver notice to waiver applicant page. So the proposal is to add that one sentence, which is a single page here, to that instruction page.
What this asking is really that for the vendors or whatever who's given us the cost for the compliance, which is say for example vertical accessibility, is to provide the associated cost of construction along with the cost of the equipment itemized.
They will send the cost of the elevator, then some people seem to send the cost of everything that's necessary to put the elevator in, and some really don't send that. So I don't think you're getting a consistent input from people.
And Chip just highlighted for the second time that this does apply only when substantial financial cost of compliance is alleged. So that's when this piece of requirement comes into play, when you're using that the economic hardship case. All right.
This is Demi.
Go ahead, Demi.
I guess I have some clarification. The highlighted area is this. So we need two quotes from vendors on the elevator, for example, and all the supporting things for the elevator.
Correct.
But the additional statement then says we want a breakdown of the construction cost that would apply to bring the entire project into compliance. Is that correct?
No, no. It's only for that vertical accessibility, for the compliance, which is mainly, normally we're dealing with vertical accessibility most of the time. It's not really for the compliance for the whole building. No, we're only talking about vertical accessibility.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. I would clarify that in the statement, because as it reads, it could include the entire building, bringing the entire building. So you're looking at construction costs for the disproportionate, as well as the particular item, the elevator, for example.
It's not.
So I would clarify that. Because getting construction costs and the timing is what's concerning me. From an architectural standpoint, we're in design, we find out we've got an issue, we have a meeting with the building official, they say, no, you can't do it, you got to go get a waiver. I don't know construction costs. I haven't gone to bid yet. I have no idea what contractor's going to put on this. I can ballpark it, but I have concerns about the timing.
Okay, so
when it, especially sometimes when it's in design phase, they don't have numbers for a project, but they're trying to deal with it ahead of time.
Right. So I think Tom was explaining where this. Go ahead, Tom. Where this. So,
I was just going to say that this sentence is going to appear after the highlighted part. It's not going to replace the highlighted part. Or stand alone, so you can take it to apply to the cost of compliance that's already in the highlighted part of the application. But if you'd like us to look at it and make the tie back to the highlighted part more clear, then that's something we can look at.
Okay. So basically, it's going to be in context of where it's found in the document, but Tom is suggesting that if need be, that can be further clarified to make that clear, which should address your comment, Benny. Any other questions? Yeah. Any other questions or comments from the RTAC members?
Do we want a recommendation?
Who suggested this?
Sorry?
A motion to suggest that this be
added?
Yeah.
Probably be good, right?
That's about,
yeah. Okay. Well, so staff's looking for some guidance then in terms of from the TAC to go on to the next phase is whether the TAC would you know, vote in favor of recommending this additional, this change to the application page, the notice to waiver applicants. So under number two, the highlighted area would be that additional sentence with some clarification of what it's applying to, which is just the cost of compliance when that is being alleged. So if there's no further discussion, would someone like to make a motion to include this? It's up to the TAC.
Jeff, this is Demi. I have one other point, and that is really to reinforce what Larry said. I do agree that I agree with all of his comments and his concerns. And I just want to put that out there on the table that it's an important piece to consider.
Okay. So I think in this case, I mean, you know, you should feel free if there's a motion not to support it if you believe it's adequate as it is, and that would be how you would vote in regard to whether to recommend this be taken to the next step.
Right, Jeff. And this doesn't vote. Yeah. I just wanted to clarify for my own sake and I guess for the record. What we're doing here, we're going to be, the TAC will decide whether to vote to recommend that the commission open rulemaking to include this information in the form. That's what we're talking about here, right?
Yes, absolutely.
All right.
Right.
So then that would begin the rulemaking process. There would be potentially a rule workshop held. This is really just very preliminary as far as the TAC making a recommendation to the commission as a whole.
Right. So I think that's a good clarification. Most of you are familiar with that this form is in a rule, as you recall, when it was originally developed. So does anybody want to make a motion? If not, then that will sort of stand for itself. So, all right, well, no one's making a motion, and I guess the assumption is then that the TAC believes the form as it is sufficient. Is that correct, TAC members?
Yes.
Does anybody disagree with that? All right, let's do something affirmative. How about a motion to that the TAC... No.
Do nothing.
Yeah, we can do that, too. Okay, very good.
There's another piece.
Couldn't hear that whirl. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that whirl.
All right, so the assumption is the TAC hasn't made a motion, so the assumption would be that TAC is fine with the form as it is, since no one made a motion to include the additional language as a prelude to opening a rule to make a change.
I would note that this doesn't preclude anyone from bringing the issue up with the commission if they wish to. Any commissioners here, any members of the public that want to discuss the matter. We're talking about the TAC making any kind of affirmative recommendation as a whole right now. Yeah. So there's no motion on the table.
Right, so now we have historic buildings, right?
Yeah. The next issue, Diana, also again asked that this to be included as part of this item. So, Diana, if you want to, speak on it, we'll be good. See, if you want to explain what you want to do.
Okay. As it stands right now, it looks as though the Accessibility Labor Council and the Commission as well have been looking solely at whether or not a facility is designated as historic or not in order to grant a waiver for accessibility. I think that's an incorrect process because according to, if you look at the exceptions in our code, if you look also at the state of Florida, State Historic Preservation Office, you see that it's a two-step process. Number one, they should be an application to the State Historic Building Facility or the designated Historic Preservation Office, and if they believe, and the Historic Office would verify whether or not doing the ADA requirements or the accessibility requirements would threaten or destroy the significance of the building or facility. If the State Historic Preservation Office agrees with that, then they would issue a letter that the applicant would take to the building commission, the Accessibility Advisory Council would make a recommendation that the waiver be granted. And then on to the commission. And that's basically the difference. Is I believe it should be a two-step process. Number one, going to the Historic Preservation Officer for a letter, and number two, then going to the Accessibility Advisory Council.
Well, that's what we're doing now.
Thank you.
Chip, go ahead.
That's how the process is being handled now. We get a letter from the Department of State or the other board, but we're not accepting any letters from the City of Miami's historic boards or any local historic boards whatsoever at all. It's strictly now the state, basically from the Department of State, for the historic, and so that's the process we're actually following now.
Diana? Chip was explaining the process that is being used at the Advisory Council, which is requiring the Department of State's Historic Board to weigh in on whether the building has historic significance.
And also, this is Mommy Donnie, and we also making sure that the letter state that this would threaten or destroy the historic significance of the building, making sure that the letter also specify that.
Diana, are you still there? So it sounds like what if I'm hearing correctly is that what Diana's requesting is already what's being done.
That's correct. There
was an issue. We had been basically accepting letters from like City of Miami Historic Department,
right,
and then say we feel that it doesn't need to be done.
Hello, Diana. This is Jeff.
I can hear you, Diana.
So what Mo and Chip...
Hi, I'm sorry. I did not hear that whole section. My phone call terminated. I've just called back in.
Okay, so in essence, what staff is saying is that currently exactly what you're requesting is what is being required. They're only accepting a letter from the Department of State's Historic, whatever it's called, Historic Board, and they're also making ensuring that Marie.
The letter from whom? I'm sorry.
Okay, we.
Can I just get, like for example, not the last commission meeting, but the one before. So something like six historic labor applicants. One of them only had a letter from the Historic Preservation Office. The others did not. So I don't know exactly what it is that.
Go ahead, Chip.
Two-step process is it?
All right, okay, Chip's going to explain
it. As I was saying before, we previously were taking letters from the city of, like, say, for instance, the City of Miami Historic Board, that the City of Miami felt that making any changes to this building would hurt the historical character of them, like on Collins Avenue. Well, we've stopped doing that, and we're only taking a letter from the Department of State, which it states in the code that, you know, the Department of State, and there's one with the, I think, federal.
Yeah, this is Mom and Donnie. I think Diana, too, I think the code, this is a code issue, too, really. The code under section 202.5, which is really you referenced in your email, there's an exception there. It says where the state historic preservation officer or advisory council on historic preservation determined that compliance with the requirement for accessible route, entrances, or toilet facilities would threaten or destroy the historic significance of the building facility. So at this point, we're only accepting a letter from the state historic preservation officer, which is the state, the Department of State, or an advisory council, as you know, as stated in the code, making sure that the letter also provide statements with the fact that, you know, the alteration or the intended alteration would threaten or destroy the historic significance of the building. This is something we are emphasizing at this point, and those letters will be consistent with what's required by the code.
So in essence, Diana, what staff is saying
it
is...
It might be a good idea to clarify that a bit in the application, because to me it does not look very clear that it's a two-step process like that.
Well, if you read that, Diana, in the application, we say this is what's really stated. Historic building on which compliance with the requirement for accessibility is not feasible while maintaining historically significant features. And we do ask him, please provide documentation of the designation of the building as historically significant. And the documentation would be the letter from the applicable parties as stated in the code. And we will, I understand, your comment at the last meeting for those two applications that were conditionally approved, we made sure that we get, the letter also stayed the same. So my take on it is the code is the really determining factor, and we'll, you know, emphasize the code.
Okay. So, Diana, if I might make a suggestion, it sounds like what staff is saying is that this is being done, and it's being done much more stringently at this point. Perhaps if you just take a look at each meeting going forward to see if you feel it is in compliance, and then it's covered. And if it's not, then you could bring the issue up again if you feel it's not being followed correctly. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because to me, it's a very clear two-step thing that you need to have this letter from the state historic people that it would threaten to, you know, destroy whatever exact language is, threaten to destroy the historic significance of the building. It's not just, you know, you need an extra letter from somebody that says that. And they bring this actual letter to the waiver. And you know, submit it with a waiver application.
And that's what we've said.
And we will work to ensure that those letters are in the application. So thank you.
So I think staff is in agreement that this is required. And if you could just monitor it going forward, I think you'll be satisfied with the result. If not, certainly bring it up again, Commissioner, and I'd be happy to take a look at it.
Sounds good. I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Sure. Well. Okay. That's it for the waiver application. Is there any?
Yeah, this is this is Larry Schneider. I'd like to follow up on this discussion. It was my understanding when the ADA was written, when it first came out, that anything dealing with accessibility on the state historic on.
Larry, you kind of faded there. Are you still on the phone, Larry?
I couldn't hear any of it.
Yeah, I think he got kicked off somehow or kicked himself off.
He's still there.
Larry, maybe your phone's on mute, Larry, or something happened? All right, well, while we're waiting for Larry, is there any other comments from anybody from the public or any TAC member? Larry, are you back on? Commissioner Gross, what sounds like we've covered the business of the day. What would you like to do in the short term?
I think we can go ahead and adjourn if you have some action.
That makes sense. If you'd like to go ahead and ask for a motion to adjourn, please.
Roll call.
Oh, sorry. Thank you. The roll call. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, this is Larry Schneider. I'm sorry I got disconnected. I apologize.
Sorry, Larry. We already adjourned, man. Sorry. No, just kidding.
No, I heard you were making the motion, so that's why I'm glad I was able to get back in on the line. It was my understanding, under the requirements for historical facilities and the issue for accessibility compliance, that the interpretation and the requirements for accessibility are at the determination of the historical preservation officer. And once that is determined by that entity, I don't even know why the Florida Building Commission is even looking at it, because that is it's a historical issue, and it should be resolved by that person, and that's the one who does it. In response to Diane's question, originally, if you look under the old accessibility code, it allowed for the local historical preservation office to evaluate these things. But I want to piggyback on the thing. I'm sure that the building commission should be looking at these, because the determination is made by the historical preservation entity.
Yes, this is Diana. They don't have the ability to grant a waiver. They can only agree with the threaten or destroy part of that, but they do not have the authority to grant a waiver to somebody to not do the accessibility requirements.
This is Larry Schneider. I respectfully disagree. It's not a waiver. Okay. And what needs.
If you look at the website of the State Historic Society, it says. I'll read it exactly. Both federal and state regulations which implement the ADA and the Florida Building Code provide for a consultation process with the state historic preservation officer when an entity undertaking alteration to a qualified historic building or facility believes that the accessibility requirements of ADA would threaten or destroy the significance of the building or facility. If the State Historic Preservation Officer agrees with the entity undertaking alterations, then alternative minimum requirements specified in ADA and SPC, or in rare cases, alternate methods of access may be used. So this would include the waiver.
Okay, well, that's helpful. Thank you for the feedback. If there isn't any other discussion, and we've already asked for public comment, I'm going to conduct a second roll call. Commissioner Gross.
I'm here.
Bimmy Eustace.
I'm here.
I'm assuming Jack or Sharon are not on the phone. Barbara Page.
Yeah, still here.
I'm assuming Linda's not on the call. Commissioner Schiffer?
Still on.
Commissioner Schilling?
Yes, I'm here.
Larry Schneider?
Present.
Commissioner Worrell?
Yes.
And Jim Willihand?
Yes, here.
So we have the same eight members who joined the call at some point. Commissioner Grosser, would you adjourn the meeting?
Okay, meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it, everybody.
Bye-bye.